No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I am joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-429-5471 or Skype us at BBS Radio 2. We have no guest today. Once again, we have invited a gun advocate to come on the show to discuss developing a reasonable national gun policy with no response. So we're going to discuss some of the issues of the day, and we hope you will call in and join in the conversation. I think the problem is reasonable national gun policy. I think that's what's scaring these guys. But before we get started, let me first introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from Arizona and is sending her son, Diego, to Washington in a few weeks to be deprogrammed. I have 3 days to turn him into a liberal Democrat. He's now a conservative Republican, something she has failed to do over the last 20 years. Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for helping get the conversation started.
Oh, my gosh. What an introduction. Well, yes, I am sending Diego to you. You have 3 nights and 2 days to see what you can do. Maybe you can at least budge him to be an independent. Although he says that he's just a fiscal conservative, he doesn't really care about social issues, but he'll understand as his brain develops, you know, because guys' brains don't develop until they're like 25, 26.
Until they're 40. Yeah,
and then actually it's better when they hit their head on, you know, they hit their head on the sidewalk, get a concussion, because they're even more reasonable then. But thank you for housing him, and I hope you got your rice-a-roni out so you can feed him, and he should have a great time. And I know that Zoe, who, remember, they were both on our program when we were talking about college, you know, what's important to college students, she'd like to meet with you too, and I think she's a little bit easier to deal with than Diego, but you got your work cut out for you, and I'm laying odds, and we'll see who wins.
Well, first of all, let me tell you, it's always been my opinion that he's a conservative Republican because he knows it drives you crazy. So,
That's true.
It won't drive me crazy. You know, it's easier to deal with other people's kids. Your own kids are the problem. Before we get started tonight, I want to note the passing of a great statehood advocate from Alaska. His name is Mike Stepovich, and he was a lobbyist who also served in the territorial legislature, and he was instrumental in making Alaska the 49th state. Mr. Stepovich was 94 years old, and he really played an important role in bringing Alaska into the Union. I think all of us who work in that vein in trying to get statehood for our different areas, territories, have great admiration for Mr. Stepovich, and my condolences go out to his family and friends. But now, on a more positive note, I want to talk about what I did last night. I really got to do something fun and interesting, and it just restored my faith in the future. I know that you and I, Kathleen, are going to talk about some issues that are a little more depressing as the show goes on today.
Right.
But I want to tell you about something that was just fabulous last night. I got to go to the Franklin D. Watkins Awards, which were sponsored by the Alliance of African Athletes, and the awards were just an amazing thing that showcased five tremendous athlete scholars in America. These are all young men who not only have succeeded on the playing field. In fact, they've exceeded most expectations. They're all tremendous athletes, but they're also tremendous scholars. And the Franklin Watkins Award attempts to highlight how important it is for young African-American men to succeed in the classroom as well as on the field. And it was named for a guy named Franklin Watkins, who was a Pennsylvania football and basketball coach, and he evidently was a mentor to many, many young African-American males. He had an exceptional talent for communicating with African-American youngsters, and he was really a mentor to a lot of them. And so they named the award after him, and he was the father of the National Alliance of African-American Athletes. And these five young men were just exceptional. If they're out there listening, I just want to do a shout out to each one of them. And listen to these guys. Tony Brown, 3.7 grade point average from Ozen High School in Beaumont, Texas. Xavier Carmichael, 4.2 grade point average. I don't even know how you get a 4.2 grade point average, but he got it at St. Paul's Episcopal School in Mobile, Alabama. Robert Okerick, 4.4 grade point average from Foothills High School in Santa Ana, California. Christopher Register, 3.8 GPA from James Benson Dudley High School in Brown Summit, North Carolina. And Richard Yergin, who has a 4.2 GPA from the University School in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. These, I got to meet each one of these guys, and they were amazing. They're going to schools. In fact, let me tell you that Robert Okerick won the award, and he's going to Stanford University. Not a bad place to go to school, huh? Not only, you know, I mean, we all recognize Stanford as a great educational institution, but it's also a great football team. The Stanford Cardinals are traditionally one of the great football teams in America. And I'd like to point out that Jameis Winston, who was in the 2012 Watkins class, or one of the Watkins finalists, was last year's Heisman Trophy Award winner. So these guys are just tremendous. They're not only tremendous on the field, but they're tremendous off the field. It was inspiring to talk to all of them and see what great young people they were. And when they stood up and they gave their speeches, I want to tell you, Kathleen, each one of them mentioned family. They mentioned God. They mentioned service to their community. They mentioned all the things that you desperately hope that young people care about. And these five extraordinary young men certainly cared about all those things. And it was an honor to get up and speak to them last night. And who knows, maybe we can have some of them on the show in the future.
That would be great. And you know, especially I'm sure it was great to hear your background, because you were like an ex, like Hell's Angel dropout in school. And you were kind of a bad boy when you were 15, 16, and, 17.
And also a great athlete. You know, the most distinguished moment of my athletic career, this was the single most distinguished thing I ever did in athletics. I slid down the bench one time when my mother came to a game, and I got a splinter in my rear end that went in a couple of inches. I jumped up, pulled a piece of the bench out. My mother was hysterical. They had to rush me to the emergency room. They took the splinter out. I got two stitches. I mean, it wasn't even an honorable wound. You know, I ended up with two stitches. I think they only gave me the two stitches because they felt sorry for me. And then I got the nickname the rest of the time I was in the Little League of Old Woodass. You know, my brother used to say that if my mother ever sold a station wagon, you know, we have one of those station wagons that they made back in the 70s that was like an airport limousine, you know, you could fit like 30 kids in it. And he used to say, man, if she ever sells a station wagon, they will cut you from the team. It's the only reason you're out there. So yeah, it was a thrill for me to be there with all these great athletes last night. And I told them my story. I said, you know, as you know, Kathleen, I dropped out of high school when I was a teenager because both my parents died. And my sister just wouldn't let me fail. She made me get a GED, and that led me to a community college, which led me to a university, which led me to a graduate school. And because I'm so well-educated, I get to spend my Sundays with you.
You should be so honored.
I'm
the guy that also keeps you in check. And, you know, your sister was a great woman, and she passed away, unfortunately, also. And I know she took a lot out of her to get you on the right road.
Yeah.
And we have to really give her a lot of credit because she was a really neat lady, although she was really annoyed with us most of the time. But she was really something else.
Well, I appreciate you picking up the ball and staying on my back.
Just like she would. And you know, talking about that, you know, and they all receive scholarships. Is that was part of the program too, right?
Mm-hmm.
To go to these schools. You know, and I just sit there and I you know, I'm like an angry middle-aged woman right now because I've just seen some things lately that drive me crazy. You know, that college debt is larger than credit card debt. That we lend banks money at 1.3 interest rate, yet we're lending it to students. I mean, we were going to do it at 6.4, and thank God, it went down to 3.4. But that we would lend banks cheaper than we would lend it to the future of our country, the kids that are going to make this world still a place where we can enjoy our freedoms, where we can, you know, have some sort of happiness and live the American dream. It astounds me, and it's getting me angrier and angrier as it goes along. I think Elizabeth Warren, I was noticing that she has quite a bit of hits on her effort to lower the interest rate to at least the level that we lend banks. I mean, come on. I mean, I'd like to see the banks be charged 6.4 and the kids that are going to college or anybody that's going to get a master's or go to graduate get loans at 1.34. I mean, I just don't understand what we're doing. And for the leaders who are in Washington, I mean, come on. I just don't know what it's going to take to make these people wake up. And I thank God that there's Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's trying and is keeping on that effort to try to make some sense out of this college debt, because that is just, to me, it leads into a lot of issues that I want to talk about. And, you know, one of them is the disappearance of the middle class. And my gosh, if these kids come out with $100,000 in debt, are they ever going to be middle class? Are they ever going to be able to pay off their debt? I don't think so.
Well, I think that's a good point. And, you know, we certainly all feel this. We feel it. You and I feel it because we've got kids in college right now. And let me point out that Kathleen has not always been an angry middle-aged woman. She used to be an angry young woman. And someday soon she'll be an angry old woman.
So, I was only angry at those guys that would, you know, pee outside my apartment building in New York City. That's the only time you're getting angry.
That's another story. That's a story for another day. The guy you attacked when we came out of your apartment building that day on our way to a business
meeting. I wanted to go
pee
on his yard and see how he liked it. You know?
I know. Well, I think there'll be more and more of that as time goes on, because the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, and that's a shame. And again, you know, I don't want to digress here. I want to move on. But last night I got to see what young people can be if you put a little faith and a little effort and a little money behind them. Each one of these young men I met last night is a scholarship student. And, you know, I think it's money well spent putting people that are this brilliant and this talented through college, because they really are the hope for the future. Look, these guys are going to have a lot of things to deal with. I mean, we'll get back to the college thing in a minute, but it's 60 degrees today in Washington, D.C., and they're talking about snow by the end of the week. If you think the climate hasn't been affected by global warming, you're just got your head under a rock somewhere, because, you know, we're not leaving the world in the best shape for these young people. They're going to have we had a lot of problems to deal with coming up, but man, these guys are going to have equally as much problems. Turmoil in the world, things like global warming and the environment, and to put on top of it a bad economy with terrible unemployment. You know, unemployment's getting better, but what are the jobs out there? You and I talked about, what are the jobs? I mean, is a job at Walmart where you can't make minimum wage? Is you know, are minimum wage jobs or jobs at Walmart where you can't survive? You got to be on food stamps or whatever.
Well, listen.
Is that really going to make the economy, you know, the future for these kids? I don't think so.
Well, you brought up several things. First of all, in Arizona, this has been one of the hottest Januaries we've ever had and the driest. There has been no water. So let me tell you, it has been, yes, beautiful weather. But by, you know, May, we're going to be up in the hundreds. We've had no rain. We usually won't get any rain. January is our month for rain. And then during the monsoons, which starts in end of June, the whole state's going to be on fire. And we don't have any water to put it out. You know, I read also that this has been the fourth, no matter all the issues that are on the East Coast with the snow, it still has been registering the fourth, I think it was the month has been the fourth highest in temperature, I guess, around the world. You know, we're so focused on what's going on in the East Coast. But then again, you got to say, what the heck? These snowstorms, you got 65 degrees and then you're going to have a snowstorm. And, you know, it's been snowing since when I left in January 6th. So there is something going on. There's a consequences for all the concrete, for all the people. And to sit there and say, oh, well, you know, this is just a 100-year cycle that happens all the time is not doing due diligence to, how we leave the earth.
And it was the Republicans that said that, wasn't it, a few years ago?
It was, yes.
Yes. So let me write that down for Diego. Republicans are wrong. All right. That's the first thing we're going to teach them. You're right. It's not doing due diligence, and it's not providing or, you know, even living up to our responsibility for the people that inherit this world. You and I inherited, I think, on many levels, a better world, a good economy. You know, when I was in school, and I think this was the same with you, you went a little later than I did. But
when,
look, man, it wasn't that much later, okay? I'm being kind here. But anyway,
make a difference. Go ahead.
When I went to college, nobody thought that you wouldn't have a job when you got out of college. It just wasn't something you thought. You said, well, I don't know what job I'll have. Or, you know, people ask you, what did you want to be when you get out of college? You know, it seemed that the choices were endless and you could do what you wanted. And to a large extent, that was true. You and I both went into politics, and I don't think either one of us had any problem getting into politics. We're overworked and underpaid and abused, but you know, the jobs were there, and we got to have, I think both of us have had very interesting careers, and now things are changing dramatically.
And I see this because, you know, I was laid off of my job because the hospital I worked at, a small rural hospital that was basically, you know, providing health care for those who were illegal and were hurt as they crossed from having babies, you know, over here in the United States to just being a very poor community. And because of all this health issue, all the health reform and healthcare issues, you know, they're pretty much close to closing, and the CEO laid off all the administrative staff. I never in my life thought I would have a hard time finding a job. I've been done everything right. I've got, you know, I was never fired. I've got people who were mad when I left to go to other jobs. I've always worked hard, and I've always given more than what I was supposed to, and yet I'm in a state that's a little nuts. It's a right-to-work state, which to me, we've talked about this before, just means it's your right to work to become poor. I've seen the salaries here, just ridiculous. $35,000, and what they want you to do is what, in most of the places, they would be paying you $75,000 to do. I've talked to you a lot about, you know, I've been on the computer a lot and I read a lot and I'm scanning for jobs and different things. And I'm seeing more and more of an underlying discussion taking place of the used to haves. You know, I used to have a job. I used to have financial security. I used to be able to take my kids on vacation. I had retirement, but now I've exhausted that retirement to pay the bills while I find a job. It's a growing number of people, and it's very scary to me because, to me, it definitely reflects the disappearance of the middle class. And, you know, in talking to my son and other people, I don't understand why there isn't a more of an awareness of this. I mean, we talk the talk, but nobody really pays attention. And I see it in things where I see women who, you know, just because of their age, and they've got master's degrees. You know, I talked to you, should I go and get a master's degree?
Yeah.
They've got master's degree and they can't find a job. This is something, I mean, I feel like I'm going to work until I'm 75 or I can't get out of my chair again. But I'm thinking, am I going to be able to find a job? Because I'm at this point, I'm thinking, hey, I'm ready to just join a revolt. Because if the middle class continues to go in this direction, Americans better wake up. And especially those in Washington who are making these decisions, it's going to be very dire for the United States. You cannot have a democracy without a middle class.
Well, and you know what? We have to stand up. You're right. It's time to do something. I got to tell you that recently I had a meeting last month. I had a meeting with Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton, and she says something very interesting when we're talking about legislation that's pending for the District of Columbia. She said, nothing ever gets generated inside this building. She said, nothing in Congress, nothing ever comes from congressmen sitting around deciding what to do. Everything comes from outside. Everything comes from pressure that's put on these people that represent us. And this is how the system's supposed to work, right? To get things done. But I think sometimes we don't remember that. And so if we want to change the priorities of our government, if we want to get people working again, we need to put pressure on these guys, and we need to stop buying into this nonsense that illegal immigrants are taking our jobs, that if we paid less taxes, we'd all be, you know, the world would be a wonderful place. Right. It's not just those things. I mean, look, I don't like paying taxes any more than the next guy. It's not just about the taxes we pay. It's about the priorities we have. And you started off the show by saying that, you know, it's about charging kids more than you charge banks for money. It's ridiculous. I don't think the discount rate for banks should be 6% because that would be economically disastrous. But neither should the interest rate to students. You should be able to pay. College students should be able to get through college. I had an NDSL loan when I was a kid. That was one of the ways I got through college. I think I borrowed about $3,000. I pay more for one semester of my daughter's education than I paid for all 6 years of my college education. But I borrowed about $2,000 or $3,000 to get through college through a thing called the National Direct Student Loan. I didn't have to start paying it back. There wasn't even any interest that accrued until I graduated from graduate school. And I started paying it back. And I think that I borrowed like $3,000 and I ended up having to pay back $3,200 over several years. And I had to loan for like 8 years. When you consider I got it when I started school and then I didn't pay it off for a couple of years, you know. And
before we go to break, let me also talk about something that happened this last week on the Hill. Bernie Sanders they were discussing on the Hill the increasing minimum wage. And he was talking about the Walton family. Now, the Walton family owns Walmart. They are the richest family in the United States. And he was asking the question of these leaders in business, is it make any sense that the richest family is paying, you know, a lot of these people that work for Walmart aren't full-time. They have them on this part-time so that they don't have to get benefits. And they pay them $8 an hour. And they said most of these families are on food stamps and getting Medicare. Now, I don't understand. I mean, I remember when Walmart was all about, you know, American made and a good living wage. And what has become, you know, in a sense, they're like the new slave master. Because, yes, this one woman said, well, we shouldn't say anything bad about the family because they are keeping the cost of items really cheap so that Americans can buy it. Well, that is true. They do that. But it's at a cost to the people who work there also. It's right. Not a balance. And when you got 47 million Americans on food stamps, and I think it would shock the country to know who those people are. I mean, I read and I go to Huffington Post and there's a lot of blogs. The women who are on food stamps have master degrees. So I get very kind of frustrated and, you know, excited about this because this is the reality, people. And if we don't get our stuff together, I don't know what's going to happen. It might be too late because this can't be what America's about. It just can't be the way it goes. And you had an interesting statistic that you said that, remember you were talking about if somebody works for, what was it, $8, 40 hours a week, it's what, $480, and then that's what, about $20,000 a year, and how if you have two people working in Walmart making $40,000, you cannot live in Washington, D.C. Even if that your family had always had a home there, you can't afford to live there. Well, let me tell you, I'm looking at jobs here at $35,000. I can't, with my son and a son in college, I cannot afford a job that pays me $35,000. So what are we doing?
Well, you know, one thing that's interesting about something that you just said about people being on Medicaid in the District of Columbia this week, they've uncovered $40 million in Medicaid fraud. And I think that people out there think that there's poor people that are bilking the system, but it's not true. This is a sophisticated group of people that ran healthcare facilities in the Washington area that are stealing money from the government. So even these government programs are being poorly monitored. But it's, you know, I think people have the idea that there's people out there on welfare that could be working and they're the problem. But they're not the problem. The problem is people that are bilking the system, just like identity theft or white collar crime. Right. White collar crime. It's a real mess. And that's been a problem. We've been fighting for the minimum wage. You're right about Sanders. And we've been fighting for a minimum wage here in the district. And we've been talking about a wage of $10.50 an hour. And that would be about $20,000 a year. And people are saying, you know, if you have two people making $20,000 a year before taxes and there's a family of four, they can't support a family of four in the District of Columbia. I don't know what the average housing price is. I can just tell you that my wife and I paid $340,000 for our house 20-some years ago. And it was just assessed at $990,000. We couldn't afford to buy this house if we had to buy it today.
Exactly. And you know what? I wish people out there, if you feel like I do, or if you think I'm just crazy, or you probably think Michael's crazy, please call us at 888-429-5471 or Skype us at BBS Radio 2 with your comment. I mean, am I the only one that's freaking out about this? There's got to be people out there who are going through this who just need a place to have their voice heard, and this is it. We'll give it to you, and maybe between all of us, we can get some attention. And with that said, we're going to take a break. And this was my pick. This is what Michael says is an angry woman's
angry
pick of a song.
which explains, by the way, why you've never been fired. People are scared to fire you, and I don't blame them.
Well, they should be. They should be more afraid not they should be afraid not to have me working. I should be working so I don't start a revolution. And this is, and I have to tell you that I'm kind of the one who does the music, because Mr. Senator here doesn't even know Echo and the Bunny Men. So we're going to introduce a song. It's Fits and the Tantrums, and the song is called Dear Mr. President.
We're back with Senator Michael Brown and the angry lady from Arizona. Well, call in and let us know what you think, people. We haven't had a caller tonight, and we know that you're out there listening because we get feedback from people during the week. But call in and tell us what you think, because the only thing I can do is make Kathleen angrier.
I do want to thank the people who have, given us feedback and said that they listen and they like what we do, and they like the fact that we're not always of the same mind and that we have a good, you know, kind of a different viewpoint. So thanks a lot, because it really helps to hear from the people who listen that you know, at least we're entertaining, if nothing more.
Yeah.
You know? And again, okay, I'm in Arizona. It's like a state that just won't be quiet. You know, this new law that was introduced called SB 1060. And I have a lot of – it's very strange, because this came about from something that occurred in New Mexico, I guess in 2006 or something like that, where a gay couple was getting married and they wanted a photographer to take pictures, and the photographer did not want to take pictures of a gay marriage. So they sued, and I believe that they won in New Mexico. So Arizona decided, we don't want that to happen here. So they introduced a law, this SB 1062, and what it does is, and it's kind of interesting, but it actually prevents laws from anybody from placing a substantial burden on an individual's religious belief. So if I own a cake company, and you come in and you want me to make a cake for your gay marriage, and I'm really opposed to gay marriage, well, I gather with this kind, there's laws, federal laws, that would say that gay couple could then sue me and actually take everything I own. So this law is been put into place to protect people who do not want to be involved, whether it's make cake, take photography, a dress or suit or whatever it may be. And so, but it's very unclear. Does that mean then, and I want to ask two questions on the sides of this issue. Does that mean then that this law allows somebody to say, well, I don't like Jewish people, or I don't like Mexicans, or I don't like Catholics, you know, and I'm not going to sell anything to them? My other question is, I kind of always thought, as an independent, a small business, you had the right to refuse people, I guess, if they didn't wear shirts, if they didn't wear shoes, if they were unruly, and if you just didn't want to serve them because maybe they were the town crier who cried hateful things. So this law has gone into place, and Brewer is deciding whether or not she's going to veto it or sign it. And of course, now people are very upset. And they're saying that just like, you know, the 1060 law that passed, this is going to really hurt Arizona and tourism. And people are already saying, I don't want to come to that state. I don't want to work in this state. That would be hateful. So it's a very complex issue. What do you think about it?
Well, first of all, I think that you have a proud tradition in Arizona in doing stupid crap that keeps people from coming there. You know, you didn't celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday and they canceled the Super Bowl and other things there. So, you know, you're not the most liberal state, which you point out. But I think that I don't think that you should have the right to discriminate on certain things. You know, all rights are limited. The right to the First Amendment, which is sacred in our nation, it's limited. You can't shot fire in a crowded building. So I think there's always limitations. But I think there's certain criteria, you know, you certainly can't discriminate on the basis of race and sex. And I think in most places, sexual orientation, I'm surprised that you can do that. Of course, I also would tell you, as a man that ran a business for 25 years, if somebody were to say to me that they weren't going to take my wedding photography because I was gay, what I would do is I would make that public, and I bet that person would lose so much business in the end that they would change their mind quickly.
Let me just ask you this. Why would you want somebody who didn't want to make you a cake and didn't want to take your photography? Why would you want that person to do it? Why wouldn't you go to – I'm sure there's somebody else who would, and that guy loses your business. You can tell people about it. And I guess the reason they did this law, there are 21 states that have laws that say you cannot deny services to someone based on that person's sexual orientation or gender identity. And then you can sue them and take them for everything they have. Now, Arizona isn't one of them, but state lawmakers were concerned of another law called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And I guess what that does is it kind of prevents – And this is what I got to try to do a little bit more understanding, but I guess that law there would say that you have to serve, if you have a business, anybody.
Well, you know, I mean, you have to think back, and maybe I'm because I'm a little older, and let me point out just a little older.
I remember
the days in the South, you know, where you didn't serve African Americans at restaurants. But not because you had any problem with African American, you know, you made up some other reason for not letting African Americans eat in your restaurant or stay in your hotel or whatever. And I think the young freedom riders that went down there and sat in at lunch counters, they really weren't interested in eating at Kresge's. I mean, I've certainly eaten at Kresge's in my life, and you wouldn't drive 300 miles for the food. But they were interested in showing that this was wrong and that it had to be changed. And I think that's the problem, is that if you allow people to discriminate, then they get to discriminate on a whole range of different things. And, you know, we don't remember sometimes that this was not our distant past, but our recent past. I went when I was 8 or 9 years old to Louisiana with my parents, and we stopped at a restaurant and it said members only. And I said to my father, I'll never forget this. I said to my father, Dad, we can't eat here. It's for members only. And he looked at me and he said, don't worry, son, we're members. And I thought to myself, well, that's pretty cool. He's a member of a restaurant in Louisiana. You know, it wasn't until I got a little older that understood that if you were all white people were members. So, you know, people are very clever about the way they discriminate. And I think, you know, we need to protect against that.
Well, let's take this another way. Okay. That, you know, the law that bans discrimination at public accommodations based on religion in Arizona. Okay. Let's look at it this way. I have a bakery, and in my town, in say in Arizona, a Baptist church comes and they pick at a funeral of a soldier and they tell me to bake a cake and they want it to say God hates. And, you know, God hates, you know, that terrible word that starts with an F, right?
Yeah.
And I don't want to make it. I don't want to bake that cake that is promoting hate. Well, the way it stands now, they could sue me and take my business away. So that is the other side, supposedly, that they're saying. And that way, it also goes for people who don't want to have to provide a service for people who promote hate. So, you know, it just gets very complicated. And it just seems to me that, you know, you have to look at both sides. And I just have to shake my head because it, you know.
Well, it's a tough law.
It's a tough law.
I agree with you. You know, we have that problem here. And I'm proud to say, as you know, I ride a Harley Davidson in my spare time sometimes. And I'm proud to say that those hate from that church in West Virginia who come to Arlington Cemetery of all places and hold up signs that say, you know, your son is dead because God hates soldiers or God hates Americans. I'm proud to say that the way they dealt with that most recently at a military funeral last year is that hundreds of people showed up on their Harley Davidsons and surrounded the cemetery, and you know how loud a Harley can be, and kept their motorcycles revved up so the family of the poor fallen soldier couldn't hear these idiots who are out there and interpret the Old Testament of the Bible as, well, let's say they interpret it in a very unique way. So, you know, and that has to do with their hatred of gay people. But yeah, you know, you've got to, if you're going to let the NAACP have freedom of speech, you also need to have allow the white Nazis, you know, what do they call them? The White Socialist Party or whatever.
Yeah, supremacy.
To have freedom. Right. To have freedom of speech. And it's hard. It's hard to listen to. You know, and it is the downside, I guess, of equal rights. Equal rights have to mean equal rights, even equal rights for the ignorant and bigoted among us to express their opinions. So I think it's a very tough law, and I think you're right. But I would be against it. I would say to the governor, don't sign that, you know, allow people to sue. On the basis of federal laws that, work against discrimination, because that's why they're there.
Well, I wonder, you know, I kind of might stand with the other side on this and that, you know, do we need these type of laws? And I would say that sometimes we have to have some common sense, and we can't look to the government to always do everything for us. And in a sense, I think boycotting somebody that who wouldn't do that could be just as good as suing them in a court of law. I just, you know, we sue so much on those things.
Yeah. I agree with that, and I agree, especially when it comes to gay people, because gay Americans have shown that they are well organized and that they are effective. You know, if they want to boycott something, I think they'd be very effective at doing it. And you're right, as a guy who ran a business for 25 years, I can tell you it's stupid to tell people that you don't want to serve them. I agree. Boycotts would be very effective, and maybe we don't need a law. Maybe we don't need to sue. But yeah, it's one of those tough questions. A lot of tough questions. We have a caller on line one who calls in from time to time. Lynn, let's see what Lynn has to say. Lynn, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hello?
How are you?
All right. Yeah, good. Thank you. Good to talk with you guys. Yeah, you know, we're really in a paradigm shift on the planet globally. And, you know, you have to remember, where was money 400 years ago? Beads and fish, you know. I mean, crazy times we're going through. So I'm working with a group that is working to have a global financial reset, you know, onto the gold standard and go towards a whole new economy, and so that we can actually recreate the whole paradigm with new cities of light, and civil services that are green and get all the new renewable energy jobs and products going quickly, edible landscaping with natural foods and remedies, or using it in restorative justice programs already, industrial hemp, all the infrastructures that are needed, you know, the hydrogen cars, electric. And then also going into what's really critical as part of this, why can't our kids be recruited at this time to come together in these multicultural healing arts teaching and ascension centers for all the light workers and, you know, truth journalists and communication artists, and work together with all the healing body, mind, spirit expo people. They're in every city. They're even in the outreaches of Montana and everywhere. So they're actually being taught and trained how to heal one another instead of all the drugging and jailing and guns and warring and killing of each other. So I really want help to get this New Earth Jobs Bill created, you know, with the new financial structure put in place. And that's what I was hoping to talk to you guys about, because it's really critical. Like I said, these healing, teaching, ascension centers can have virtual, local, and global programs with interactive programs with teachers from all over the world, and have all these 24/7 open for reaccessing source, all these new, like I said, New Earth healing teaching programs that are available, quantum touch, you know, laying out of hands. There's all kinds of massage therapies. These should be the therapies that are out there, not drug therapies. We really need to reevaluate the hospitalization insurance drugging companies, and the kids at these places can learn all how to access all drug highs for free. There's no reason for the heroin trade to be proliferated any longer either. So that's just what I wanted to talk about.
Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you.
And I think that the good news here is that you have the internet. You have people that can now reach out across lines, because you understand that there's powerful interests at work here. When you want to talk about things like homeopathy, you know, that's one side of the coin. The other side is you've got the drug companies, you've got the medical establishment, you've got people that have an interest in the paradigm as it exists today. So I think the internet is going to help in that shift, because you now have the free access of information, which I don't think you had 30 years ago. I think 40 years ago, before the internet, you heard whatever was put on TV or whatever came over the radio or whatever information was provided, and all those things take money, and the internet doesn't take money. You can put information out there, and I think there will be an explosion in the next 50 years in the direction of sounder financial policies, better greener technologies, and you know, people that do move in the direction that you're talking about. You know, I'm not a person that believes in either disassembling the medical establishment or getting rid of drug companies or any of those things, but I do believe that there's a lot out there that we can learn, and that I think people will reach out through the internet. What do you think, Kathleen?
No, I think it's amazing, because, you know, whether you – I was heard of this terrible disease. It's called cyclical vomiting syndrome, and it's where people, you know, vomit all the time, and it's a very painful and very miserable way of having this disease, and very little people know about it. But through the internet, you can acquire information. You know, there's an association. There's a Facebook page. And so it does give – immediate access to questions that, I mean, how would you find out who else is suffering and what clinical studies might be going on? But through the internet, you know, really at the tips of your fingers, you can be connected. And then at the same time, there's so much technology, you know, that it's also fearful. I think it's just everything in life has to be done in moderation and with common sense. And that's what we really need to be focusing on, kind of some common sense, and bring that back to, you know, something that we teach our kids.
Yeah, I agree. That's how I found out For example, I suffer from a condition called sleep apnea, and that's how I found out. I went and I took an exam. You know, my wife practices medicine without a license because her mom was a doctor. So she's our family physician, you know. And she told, when I came up with the idea that I had sleep apnea, she laughed at me. She goes, you don't stop breathing. But anyway, I went to San Diego and University of San Diego on the web, and I took a test and I found out I did. I see we have John from Miami on the phone. Let's talk to John, see what he has to say. John, are you with us?
Oh, yes. Hello.
Yeah. Hi. What's up, John? Thanks for calling in.
Hi. No problem. My kind of question was just kind of briefly, you guys were talking earlier about Arizona's controversial laws. Mm-hmm. And being in Miami, Florida, I'm sure you guys know, also has their set of controversial laws, such as the Stand Your Ground with recently the Dunn murder case and the Trayvon Martin earlier last year. And those are both very unfortunate things.
Yes,
and my kind
are.
Of question to you guys was, I think that the people who orchestrated these laws on both in Arizona and Florida, I don't think that they for bad purposes, you know, regardless of if you think they're good or not. I'm sure that they were trying to do good. But I do think that in both cases, there may have been necessity for those laws, at least for some kind of change. My kind of question was, what would you guys recommend for, in this case, Arizona? Because there are many people who are religious and are worried that they would be forced to cater to or to be involved. I think a lot of religious people maybe don't care so much about gay marriage as long as they don't have to be surrounded by it. They don't have to participate in it. So in the government, so what would kind of your be suggestion on a way to make it so that you don't have to participate in something you morally oppose?
Well, I think that's a good question, John, and I think that it's a problem that we have in Washington, for example. Locally, we have very liberal laws. We have same-sex marriage, for example, and this was an issue that we had to deal with politically, and there were many older people that didn't believe in that, and you have to respect that belief. I think you do, but I think that you also can't legislate out of fear. And my particular feeling about a lot of these laws is that they come from fear. I mean, I think that when you have somebody who stand your ground, for example, I think that's because people are afraid. It's not because, I think you're right, I think it's not because they're bad people. I think it's because they're afraid. We look at this situation where this guy shot the kid in the car for playing the music too loud, and he said he thought the kid had a shotgun or a gun. Maybe he did think that, but I think that you got to be brave in life. You know, my good friend and angry woman, Kathleen Gomez, used to live in Manhattan. She used to live in Manhattan, and I know that she moved freely around a very tough city. And correct me if I'm wrong here, Kathleen, you never carried a gun.
No, I never did. And you're right. And remember, we were in the convention in L.A., and we were in the middle of everything, and I was crossing the streets, and you were afraid, and I was just – it was an attitude you had to have, an attitude of not having fear. And it's amazing if you walk with confidence and if you stand your ground with common sense. You know that it's really not worth shooting a kid because the music is too loud. Now, when you talk about Arizona, I do understand what you're talking about. There are people who have very deep beliefs, and they don't really feel comfortable with gay marriage. And they have every right, to, as an American, under the Constitution, to believe religiously what they believe, and that might dictate that is something very wrong, and they don't feel comfortable with it. I can kind of understand where that's coming from, and when you're trying to ram it down somebody's throat, in a sense, that you got to accept it, that creates even more fear, and you even create a more unstable situation. It's a very, very tough thing because there's more and more people, and we're more and more diverse, and we have to figure out a way to do it without looking at suing each other or getting guns necessarily to talk for us. I mean, and you know, and I'm somebody who still, I still think there are many situations where you need a gun, and in certain places in the United States. Now, I don't want to carry, never did carry a gun in Manhattan, but if I'm out on my sister's ranch, even though Chapo just got, you know, arrested, Mr. the huge cartel guy that was so violent and created so much of this bloody, terrible wars that were going on in Mexico, 10,000 killed since he was head of the drug cartels, and just in El Paso, in Juarez, you need a gun. I mean, so you see, it's so complex. There's no easy way. There's no simple answer. Just got to have some common sense.
Well, that's why we want to get the gun people on to talk about it.
Yes. So
work something out. But
I'm your friend. I don't know why I'm afraid.
But let me straighten out a little bit of revisionist history here by Kathleen. When we were in Los Angeles, the LA cops were throwing tear gas at rioters, and that's where you wanted to walk down the middle of the streets. You were like, I'm from Manhattan. Tear gas doesn't bother me. Well, I want to tell you something. I don't want people out there thinking that me and Lisa Rowan were afraid to cross the street. We just didn't want to get in between the police with the tear gas and the rioters. So there's a difference between being brave and being crazy. And before we get off the air, we're almost off the air. Tonight, the Olympics close. And I just want to, since we started the show out talking about exceptional athletes, I want to point out that the United States got 28 medals, 9 gold, 7 silver, 12 bronze, second only to the Russian Federation. So I'm proud to be an American, and certainly when it comes to athletes and what they did, what our athletes did in the Olympics, I just think, as always, they've made us proud. So I'll give you the last word.
Oh, my gosh, can't believe it.
Braveheart.
Okay, well, we're going to be talking about education. You know, there's a big movement in the United States to take public schools and make them charter schools, which I'm very against. We're having Leonie Hamson from Class Lives Matters. She graduated from MIT. She's been very involved in educational issues. She's going to be on our March 9th program, and then Dr. Miller is coming back the following weekend. So I think our month on March is going to be about education. Again, another issue that we need to all get involved in, because it's definitely the future of our country. And with that, I'll give it back to you, Senator Brown.
Okay. Well, we're going to close tonight by saying again, congratulations to Robert O'Carrick, who will be in Stanford next year. Congratulations on receiving the Watkins Award. I was inspired by all you young people. And so we've talked about some tough issues tonight, but let us not forget that there's a lot of hope out there. And
yes.
Thanks for calling in, folks, and let's keep it going. We'll see you next week. Thank you.
Yes. Good luck, Diego.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.